fashionably lean. It's the Friday edition of the Lars Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Oreck. Locally owned and operated Oreck Home Centers all throughout the St. Louis area. Not just great vacuums, all sorts of great stuff to keep your house clean. O-R-E-C-K spells Oreck. I am Paul Harris, Ian Geis, and Dan Strauss here with me. And now our news director, Colin Jeffrey, puts on his cape and assumes the role of his alter ego, Showbiz Boy, to talk about movies and other showbiz stuff. Hi, Colin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine.
That's good.
I was shocked at a movie that did not make money this week. A movie with a budget of $29 million that did not do very well. It's the FIFA movie. FIFA, the soccer organization, it's embroiled in scandal now. And
the story of Sepp Blatter.
Sepp Blatter, the man who I think invented the catheter.
Yes, he did.
That was good, Paul.
That was Sepp Blatter.
It was Sore Blatter, his brother. They made a movie called United Passions, all about the soccer organization FIFA, starring Tim Roth. Was a pretty good actor. I liked his Fox TV show Lie to Me a few years ago, and he's been in everything from Pulp Fiction to all sorts of stuff recently. So FIFA spent $29 million, and it opened last weekend here in the United States and brought in a total of $607.
Oh.
What? Did I read that wrong? Should it be $607,000? No, $607. And around the world, total global take, $178,000. Once again, your budget, $29 million. FIFA, we don't know anything, including soccer. That's their new slogan.
It has a score of 1 on Metacritic. Score of 1.
Well, the reviewer from the New York Times wrote, it's one of the most unwatchable films in recent memory, a dishonest bit of corporate sweet sanitizing that's not even good for laughs. And another reviewer wrote, it's a squirm-inducing heap of propaganda. Squirm-inducing! Now, there are times when you go to a movie, and especially a horror movie, can make you squirm in your seat because you're uneasy. Mm-hmm. But this was a squirm that I think everybody who went to see it was like, can we get out of here now?
Yeah.
This is horrible. What do you have for us today, Colin?
Well, there are two movies opening this weekend, only one of them in St. Louis, but I encourage you to see the other one when you have the opportunity. It's called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. This is a Sundance hit. It won the jury and audience, I think, awards.
Okay.
So
what's it about?
I've not even the slightest clue. I'm just saying, go see it. It's got a great
I'm guessing there's
cast.
A young female who is not well.
Yeah, but I think it's actually about three guys primarily. It's very odd.
Me and Earl and the dying girl. That's two guys.
I know, but...
Assuming that me is a guy.
Yeah. So there you go.
There's a sentence I've never
awkward
said before.
High school.
Assuming that me is a guy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's a couple of high school friends.
Okay.
One of whom is dying.
All right. And the other movie that's opening this weekend is going to be the giant blockbuster for the weekend.
Yeah, maybe this summer. It's going to be a really big one, I think. Jurassic World. 22 years later after Jurassic Park... We return to the idea, the park, and that's where this movie picks up. It is 22 years after
So it's not a reboot. It's not like we're going back and, let me tell you about an idea I had that involved a bug in Amber.
No. In fact, they do a good job for the new generation who may not be familiar with Jurassic Park of giving just a quick synopsis in there, and it's sort of folded into the story of how we make dinosaurs without it feeling tedious for those of us who've seen the first one multiple times or even just once and remember it.
Yep.
And it does take place in the movie. It's 22 years after the events of the first movie, and the park has now been up and operating for 10 years, just as John Hammond wanted it to be. It's there. You can go. You can see dinosaurs. But attendance and sales are starting to flag.
All right, let me just stop you right there, because I only saw the first one. Which was a brilliant piece of movie making, and I can still remember the feeling of seeing those CGI dinosaurs the first time, because I was stunned by what I saw on the screen. I think we all were, seeing humans and dinosaurs on the screen. Well, it was a phenomenal job that Steven Spielberg did with that.
I think you're referring to this scene.
Dr. Grant,
My dear Dr. Thatcher, welcome to Jurassic Park.
Had that great John Williams score to it.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a really, really good and really scary movie.
It was.
Now, and that was 22 years ago, and Samuel L. Jackson was in that with the cigarette hanging out of his mouth.
Right.
With the,
yes.
And Wayne Knight was the bad guy who was trying to steal whatever it was. I can't
the
even
DNA.
Remember.
He's trying to steal all of the embryos, the fertilized embryos of all the different...
And the Barbasol can.
And the Barbasol can, exactly.
That's right.
Nedry.
And Richard Attenborough played John Hammond,
yes.
Right? And you had...
Sam Neill played Dr...
Whatever his name was.
Oh, gosh.
It was
Grant.
Just on there.
Dr. Grant, yeah.
And Laura Dern.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about a couple days ago off the air about this, about how Sam Neill never really did anything, because he was really good in that movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it didn't really lead to other big...
He did a bunch of other things, but he was never in another big movie.
No,
right.
Nothing I had ever heard of when I looked up his other movies.
I can recommend a Sam Neill movie for you. Remind me at the end of this, because I don't want to get too far away from this.
And then what's his name?
Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum.
Yes.
Who was
very
unbelievable in that movie.
Yeah,
go back
really
and
good.
Watch it.
A perfect role for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but the reason I mention it is because at the end of Jurassic Park is essentially ruined, right?
That's right. And then the next several movies sort of deal with that. They tried, we're going to try it at another site and it doesn't work. And we're going to ship a dinosaur here because we think we've got it sorted out. And
a T-Rex, running
is
through
gonna,
cities.
California.
Godzilla-like.
Yes.
Where was the second? Was the second one still in the park?
The second one's when they... Yeah, but
when
that's...
they transferred the T-Rex.
They transferred
the
T-Rex,
city.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the third one was...
I hate when that happens and a T-Rex gets loose.
Yeah, boy, you would think you could be able to contain a T-Rex on a boat.
Yeah.
Shipping it across the ocean.
It has little arms.
Right. He couldn't reach the lock, but...
He could reach it. He just couldn't do it.
It was human error, of course, that allowed the T-Rex to get out.
Idiot humans, again. Okay, so that was Jurassic Park 1, 2, and 3, right?
Yes.
And now we've had a few years, and this is the fourth one.
It's 14 years after the events of the third film, Lost World.
But here's my question. You said that in this movie, the park has been going for 10 years.
Yes.
Which park?
It's back on Isla Nublar, which is where the first Jurassic Park takes place.
So after all of the other things that happen with men trying to get dinosaurs to be petting zoo animals, essentially, somebody figured out how to do it and contain them?
Yes.
That's the idea. I'm guessing, however, and I haven't seen the movie, I'm guessing the dinosaurs still don't want to be contained.
No, this is really more of a documentary. No, yes, the dinosaur, of course. And what happens is sales are dropping off, attendance is dropping off. And
because
so,
they became almost domesticated, right?
Yeah,
the dinosaurs,
they were just,
it was like very zoo-like where...
And it's not even that they were zoo-like.
For a high five of the T-Rex, but he couldn't reach.
Yeah, Chris Pratt being able to, he's trained the velociraptors now, or
yeah,
he
that's
can
the
command
idea.
Them around. And
he's got,
what?
So that's the story, right? The
sort of
the people that go get bored with it because
they're just typical dinosaurs. They see a T-Rex, they see a Stegosaurus, and it's not as exciting. So
typical dinosaurs.
But it is politically correct. They've introduced the gay dinosaur, the Megasaurus.
All right.
But you
can do the other one.
You mentioned the whole thing about people getting used to it, and also the dinosaurs being domesticated. Let's be honest for a second here. We have one of the great zoos in America here in St. Louis.
Yes.
But how many times have you gone there? Now, you have a little boy and you have a little girl, so you're probably making more zoo visits than I am with an adult child. But when you go there and it's a warm day and you're walking around and you can tell the animals are all on a break. You know, they're hiding out in the shade. They're not moving around. If you take your kid there, you want to see animals running around and being like they're out in the wild. But they aren't.
The chimpanzees straddling each other and, rolling around. And
but you don't get that. So I can imagine that's what happens in this kind of domesticated Jurassic Park.
They've discussed that and they've sort of dealt with that in that there's a giant swimming dinosaur, and if you've seen it, it's called a Mosasaurus. I've got to look at my notes for these names, but it's a gigantic...
You see that scene in the trailer over and over, the one jumping out of the tank of water, grabbing...
And it's like a Shamu scene.
That's the one where Edward G. Robinson says, "Where's your Mosasaurus now?"
There you go. Wow.
He's in this?
This has gone off the rails.
At what point were we on the rails? Let's be honest. Come
on.
And so they have shows and feedings, much like you would in zoos, where you can go and see them.
So the worst thing was happening in that scene is people are getting splashed with water.
Oh, just no.
Yeah.
But it's actually a really neat park. Like, I actually like the layout of the park. It seems sort of futuristic and kind of cutting edge, and they've made it a very visitor-friendly experience because you actually have to stay there. But that's – so attendance slagging. Bryce Howard or Dallas Howard is the main actress, if you saw The Help.
Ron Howard's daughter.
Yes.
Really?
She is – she's the main operator of the park.
Okay.
She has to oversee this. And in order to boost attendance, they are creating dinosaurs now. And this first dinosaur they're creating, they're adding all sorts of different secret ingredients to create what's called the Indominus Rex. It's bigger than a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Faster, and it has big forearms.
Couldn't possibly be any negative connotations to doing something like that.
Exactly. Oh,
it has Popeye forearms, like... real big forearms?
Yeah.
Well, longer than a T-Rex.
Wow. Okay.
So it can, yes. Well, so of course the dinosaur escapes containment.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what has to happen. You have to see this dinosaur running loose. And this dinosaur unintentionally, maybe intentionally, starts to cause problems in other areas that release other dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chris Pratt has to take his velociraptors and go out and hunt this dinosaur. And that's sort of the main, as you would expect, that's what they're trying to do, is capture this, save some
people. A man with friendly dinosaurs is going after the evil dinosaurs.
Yeah,
I love you, you love me.
The first thing they do is kill Barney.
Yeah. Yes.
Barney, I haven't seen the movie, but I would see it if that were in it.
This does a good job of moving along briskly, and I'm going to give an example. These flying dinosaurs are called pterodons. They are loosed upon the park.
Mm-hmm.
They break out of their aviary, and they descend on sort of the main strip where all of the people are, and they're picking people up and dropping them. However, there's a great scene, and I have to tell you this because if you aren't looking for it, you won't know this.
Okay.
You will definitely see all this chaos. There's a guy who grabs two margaritas and starts running away, but he needs to make certain he grabs these margaritas. That's Jimmy Buffett. I'm not kidding. It's actually Jimmy Buffett.
Wow.
They cast him to grab two margaritas and run away. It's a cute little Easter egg in there.
Is it a product placement for his restaurants?
Given how everything else is branded, yes, probably. This is shameless product promotion. You'll see Bose and all these, you'll see Mercedes emblems on everything. They definitely sold everything they could. And that's interesting because the park is also trying to sell sponsorships for every dinosaur. Here's what's good about this movie. It moves along. The pacing is excellent. They have sort of great comedic characters that every action movie needs. It has Chris Pratt. How can you bet against this guy? And it has characters in it that you care about a little bit. You don't want them to get hurt.
Okay.
And that's always good. We felt that in Jurassic Park.
Does it have any of those scary moments like the first one did with the velociraptors getting closing in on those kids in the kitchen?
Maybe one. That's where it loses it. It goes to be sort of a blockbuster action movie, and that's not bad, but you never have that moment of discovery or true terror. You don't get those feelings in this. It's really a big, explosive, loud movie. It also fails in that the main bad guy, the big dinosaur, isn't half as scary as a T-Rex was in Jurassic Park, isn't half as scary as the velociraptors were in they're not really scary. It sort of loses that. And without getting too PC, it doesn't really bother me, but you're going to notice it definitely if you watch it. Wow, does this go back to like the early 90s, late 80s sort of stereotype of women and men's roles in horror or action movies? Bryce Howard runs around in heels the entire movie. I'm not kidding you. Running away from dinosaurs in heels for 2 hours.
Well, that's what I would do.
Exactly. So There's moments like that that aren't particularly great.
Well, you know, when you started talking about this, you sounded really enthusiastic.
Because
and
I was looking forward to this quite a bit.
I know
was
you were.
Really looking forward to this. And they say try to check your brain at the door for movies like this. And you should. The problem is the writers are too heavy-handed. They try and cram too many things in about, oh, we're really bored with these amazing things and we shouldn't be, and have, you know, ulterior motives for creating dinosaurs. They try and throw too many plots on top of this. And it doesn't have to be there. Strip it away. Make it about dinosaurs chasing people, and you've got me. But they added all these other things, and it just, it didn't work the whole time. And additionally, the CGI is not good. And we're going to talk more about this in a second here, but it's just, it's not good. It's now, not what it should be.
That's amazing, because I know Spielberg didn't direct this, but no. he produced this movie, and, you know, he's the guy who's in charge of the lineage of Jurassic Park and taking Michael Crichton's book and turning it into now the fourth movie. Mm-hmm. You would think he, with his buddy George Lucas at ILM, would be able to make some of the greatest visuals ever. Again, 22 years ago, those dinosaurs on that screen were remarkable.
Exactly.
But I will say, in the original, when they made that 22 years ago, it wasn't all CGI.
No.
A lot of that stuff with the animals that were interacting with Sam Neill and Laura Dern, particularly when they're running in the forest. And you remember
Brontosaurus that sneezes on them?
Yes.
Yes.
That was all animatronics.
Yes.
They were using robotics not just CGI.
In fact, when the Tyrannosaurus flips over the car that the kids are in,
yeah,
that's real. That's a practical effect in that movie. They made this gigantic T-Rex, and so it looks and feels real. These kids are reacting to a weight pressing on them, not, hey, imagine there's something there and react to it.
Okay, so the way you're talking about it now, it seems like that's part of the problem here. This is all CGI, no animatronics?
Chris Pratt is supposed to have these connections to these velociraptors. Watch the behind-the-scenes featurettes. It's four guys in black suits with these lame masks on. That's not going to do it for me. You don't feel that connection that you should be feeling between a trainer and his animals. I give it a 6 out of 10.
How long of a movie is it?
It's 2 hours, and it's a tight 2 hours. You're not going to notice that it's 2 hours. I got out and thought it was about an hour and a half, and then looked down, and I'm like, wow, that moved along pretty briskly. And I will say this, the third act, when finally you get to see everything come together, wow, oh, wow, is that a lot of fun.
Okay. Now, 3D? Should you do 3D?
It's really bad 3D for what we've seen recently. That being said, I think it's opening up in 4,200 theaters, and 3,200 or 3,400 of them are 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So good luck finding it in not 3D.
Wow.
That's what I'm going to say. Just fork it over and pay for 3D.
I'm just making a note to myself. Try to find it in 1D.
1D.
You know what I remember about the very first
Flatosaurus
movie? Jurassic Park.
Flatosaurus.
Was the end of the movie when all hell broke loose and they were finally getting off the island.
Yeah.
Those pterodactyls or whatever they were, the big flying dinosaurs.
They were actually pelicans, because the whole thing was about their evolution from dinosaurs to pelicans. They were just pelicans.
Oh, they were?
Yes.
They were flying off?
Yes, they were just pelicans.
They looked like big old pterodactyls.
That was
or
the point, is yeah, they looked did. Like they were realizing, oh, you don't have to manufacture this. Nature is sort of its own reward.
Mm-hmm. Ah, because I was wondering, they're going to show up somewhere, sometime, fly over a park, and all of a sudden.
Well, that would have been a better sequel.
That would have been.
The pterodactyls fly off to some island, and now you got a new story from there.
Yeah.
He didn't call me.
It does some things really, really well for the type of movie it is. And I don't want you to get down on it. It's fun. It's just, you're holding this up against Jurassic Park, and you have to, because they're making the comparison, not me. They're saying this was John Hammond's idea, and it's not.
Let me ask you this. Let's say you have a 15-year-old kid, and you want to recommend to them that they see a Jurassic Park movie. Should they see Jurassic Park, the original from 22 years ago? Or should they see Jurassic World, having never seen any of them at all? Which one would be a better movie experience?
You should go see this in theaters, because you can see it in theaters. Then you should watch Jurassic Park with them at home, because they're going to see that. I would like to say watch Jurassic Park first, but I think Jurassic World is you have to see it in theaters to sort of appreciate the dinosaurs and everything being giant.
Yeah. And that is an important part of it. That's why the first movie worked so well, because you were able to see it on those big screens.
Oh, and there were just so many great lines and scenes. The objects in mirror are closer than they appear, and you just see the giant T-Rex jaws. I mean, there are iconic images from that.
Absolutely.
That just
now, let's
live
go,
on still.
Let's go back to the CGI thing, because you're giving it a 6 out of 10, Jurassic World. The CGI thing, I sent you a story last night and asked you to look through it about some people who are complaining about the state of CGI, because now every summer tentpole movie that comes out, whether it's a Marvel comic book hero movie or something like this, they all seem to be dominated by computer graphics. That is all the thing that Hollywood seems to be relying on more and more. Mm-hmm. And you just said minutes ago that the CGI in this is not that good.
Yeah, and it's not that it's bad. It's just you look at something 22 years ago, and you're like, that dinosaur was scarier in CGI than what you're doing now.
Wow.
And part of the reason is that I read this article, and there's a lot of nuts and bolts inside baseball no one would care about colors and all these. Ignore all of that. Here's what you will notice about CGI is when we see one another in real life, there are imperfections on our skin and in our everything. When you see a dog, its hair isn't perfectly groomed and the same color universally.
Yeah.
CGI glosses over all of that. It's too nice. It's too gentle on the subject matter. That's part of it, is it looks too perfect. You even out all of those things. And the other part of it is screens are much sharper now than they were 22 years ago.
Hmm.
So while the overall object itself, you look at the face and it's like, oh, that seems so perfect. When you get it in super high definition
with digital projection,
you start to notice, why is that kind of fuzzy? Or this looks kind of weird. It takes you out of the experience.
Hmm.
And you get something that you don't from an amazingly well recreated animatronic or puppet. And you have to look no further for that than the original Jurassic Park, or pick up the original trilogy of Star Wars on Blu-ray and watch Yoda, and you'll see the individual hairs. That's a puppet. That's what Frank Oz has. I mean, that's Frank Oz manipulating a puppet.
Yeah.
And you're going to be blown away at how that looks, and then go and watch Yoda in the follow-up trilogy, the newer ones, and he looks cartoonish. Go to the Matrix, the second Matrix film. There's a scene in there, a fight scene, that looks like a video game. It doesn't look real, and that's part of the problem, is you could overlook it when it was every now and then, but then you see movies that are 90 minutes long, and you see the director come out and say, you won't notice the 45 minutes of CGI.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's supposed to be dessert, not the main course.
Well, I think that's part of the problem, is I've seen a few of these monster special effects movies in the last few years. And anytime you're sitting in a movie theater and you're thinking to yourself, wow, these effects are great, that takes you out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be noticing that. And that would tell you they're using too much of them. And I'll give you a perfect example of the movie that got it right. Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Yes.
When Robert Patrick is just being this steely-eyed Terminator in the cop outfit who's chasing after Arnold Schwarzenegger and all that sort of stuff, and then there's that great elevator scene where Schwarzenegger uses a shotgun and blows the Terminator in half, and
yes,
his head kind of splits and springs back and forth, and then they were able to get away before it reshapes. That effect probably doesn't last more than 5 or 6 seconds on the screen. And that's all you needed to know about that. Or when he melts down towards the end of the movie. All you need is a little bit of that here and there. Mm-hmm. If you remade that movie now,
the whole thing.
And there is a new Terminator movie coming out this summer called Genesis. Terminator Genesis,
yes,
coming out in a month or so. I guarantee you it's going to have way too much CGI.
Well, it has young Arnold fighting old Arnold, so that's all CGI. It has the Arnold Schwarzenegger from the first one. Terminator 2, a practical effect in there. No computer animation. Sarah Connor opens the Terminator's head to remove a chip. She peels down the skin.
Yeah.
That was practical. There were no computers. They put a prosthetic on there and pulled it off. Scanners. Are you familiar with scanners?
Yes.
They can get in people's minds. A guy's head explodes.
Yep.
They made a dummy head, filled it with blood and offal from a fish shop, and they had a stagehand sit behind with a shotgun, and when they needed it, he pulled the trigger on the shotgun and blew up a head.
And that, to me, is special effects.
Yes, those are practical effects. Mad Max, we talked about it earlier this year.
Yeah.
They combined practical effects and CGI perfectly. If you see that movie, if you've seen it, the majority of those cars, well, every car runs, and the majority of those scenes were shot as they were. But there's one scene when something blows up enormously. you can see before that, all they did is they boosted the colors in the explosion, made it slightly larger.
Mm.
But it really blew up. And so it felt real. It had a real impact on everyone around them.
Yeah.
And you miss these with computers. The other thing it does, it takes money away from the rest of the film. The second Matrix had a budget of $150 million. $100 million went to computer effects.
Wow.
Imagine if you could spend $20 million to hire better writers and you get a movie that's better. We're spending money on CGI and not on more writers or better actors.
Now, you know what? Maybe that was part of the problem with Tomorrowland, which came out about a month ago.
Yes.
And has not done that well at the box office. And I reviewed it. My review of it was, it's the most visually beautiful movie I've seen in a while. And a great part of that is computer effects.
It is.
But there are also parts of it that are just beautiful on the screen because of the imagery that Brad Bird, the director, used. And he knows how to do that because he used to make Pixar movies. And he understands how to use colors and framing and focus and all of those things when you're dealing with computer-generated effects, which is what all the Pixar movies essentially are. So when he did something like that, it worked. But Tomorrowland still tanked at the box office, so maybe people don't want to see CGI done well.
No, yeah, it's struggling. It may hit $200 million before
it leaves
theater.
Oh, it's doing that well?
Well, internationally. And when you're talking about a movie that costs $150 to $170 million and had about the same cost of promotion, it's right now Disney is preparing to take a $140 million write-off on this movie.
That's like John of Mars money.
John Carter was $200 million, and Lone Ranger was $190 million, and all of those have one thing in common, Disney.
Disney.
Disney, all three of them. But Disney's going to do fine. They have Avengers and a piece of Inside Out and Star Wars. But no one needs to worry about losing $140 million on movies. Disneyland's not going to be more expensive tomorrow. There's going to be no impact on us because they are such an enormously large company. And this, it's crummy, but they've got other movies that are going to make it up. Their stock has not moved since this. It's not like it took a 10-point dive or
anything. But it hasn't gone up either. You would think once you come out with tentpole movies, you know, the Disney stock might be helped by that. If you're an investor, you might be going and looking at that and go, well, why do I still own this company?
And they recently just raised the rates to get into Disney World and Disneyland.
They?
Yeah. It's over $100.
Oh, it's awful.
Wow.
A day.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
$100 a day per kid?
Yeah.
Yep.
A little over $100.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it's rough. But, you know, I'm happy to see them do an original movie. Yeah, it sort of tanked, but you know what? They tried something different. It wasn't, it wasn't Bambi 7 or,
Or Jurassic World, the fourth movie in the series.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, speaking of series and speaking of CGI, the last thing I got to mention before you run here is I know you're enormously into the Star Wars universe and you can't wait for the next movie to come out at Christmas time. And I know that you're probably one of these people who has gotten together with other Star Wars geeks and argued about a scene in the very first Star Wars movie, Chapter 4, A New Hope, in which we are introduced to Han Solo the first time as a bounty hunter. And he's in this bar and he meets Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he and Chewbacca are there, and Luke and Obi-Wan hire him to essentially take him to Alderaan. You remember the scene? It's in the cantina with all the funky Star Wars characters, who, by the way, today would be CGI. They would not be people in funny costumes.
Actually, we've got to stop you there. Yes, there's going to be more CGI in this than others, but there are also, they spent a lot of money on miniatures and puppets and costumes and animatronics. They're trying to stay true to that idea of Star Wars.
All right. Well, at the end of that scene, after Luke and Obi-Wan leave, Han Solo is encountered by a guy named Greedo, who works for Jabba the Hutt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the scene that was originally on in the movie, Han Solo owes money to Jabba, and Greedo has come to collect it, and Han Solo takes his gun out under the table.
Mm-hmm.
And shoots him. Do we have the audio from that? Roll that.
Puta Solo?
Yes, Greedo. As a matter of fact, I was just going to see your boss. Tell Jabba that I've got his money.
Son Pitale. Maratam Titach Makichifta. Jabba wa ninchiko, babushani, aitani wa nyaruska.
Yeah, but this time I've got the money. I don't have it with me. Tell Jabba. Even I get bored sometimes. Do you think I had a choice? Over my dead body. Yes, I bet you have.
And that's Han Solo firing his gun at Greedo under the table and then tipping the bartender, sorry about the mess. By the way, I've always been impressed that Han Solo's character was multilingual.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke whatever character Greedo speaks, and he also could speak to Chewbacca in his language. Yeah, whatever the giant yawn sound is that Chewbacca makes. But then when George Lucas went back and kind of remade that episode, remember?
Special editions.
Yeah, he did a special edition.
1997.
And digitally remastered it. Didn't he change it?
They added a blaster shot coming from Greedo that deflects over Han's shoulder.
Ricochets over his shoulder because there were complaints that Han Solo is a hero. He should never fire first. And so in the remake, they made it so that Greedo fired first and Han was just protecting himself. He was doing the George Zimmerman stand your ground thing, I guess, by shooting him under the table. Well, now, this week, somebody in Canada found an original draft of Star Wars, which is actually marked as the fourth draft, but it's dated March 15th, 1976. The movie wasn't released until the next year. It is such an early draft that it refers to it as Star Wars Saga 1 instead of Chapter 4, A New Hope, which is what it became to be known as later. But in the original, there's no doubt that Han Solo fires at Greedo without warning. The librarian who found the script told the CBC, based on the script, I can tell you 100% that Han shot first. So forget about George Lucas's digital remake of the movie. That's the way it originally was, and that's the way he originally shot it.
There you go.
Now, you and your Star Wars geek friends can go argue about that.
Yes.
That's Colin Jeffrey, who's headed back to the newsroom now. He'll have an update on the headlines for you in about 15 minutes. He's brought to you every week here on this show by the great folks at Auric Home Centers throughout the St. Louis area. Not just vacuum cleaners, but all sorts of stuff to keep your home clean. O-R-E-C-K spells Auric.